Well, 69 was a symbol of a bigger trend that had been evolving since the end of World War II, and it was a trend away from traditions that were often stuffy. But did we also throw out some of the ancient customs that held societies together? Did we trade a culture of virtue for a counterculture of feelings and therapy? Peter Curti of the Centre for Independent Studies and Notre Dame University raises this question in his new paper, Cracking Up, Culture and the Displacement of Virtue.
Anything that was seen to stand in the way of progress was subject to challenge. And I think at the heart, the countercultural movement of the 60s, don't forget that in 1968, of course, there were very violent protests in France and in the United States, followed by Woodstock in 1969. It was a celebration, I think, of the throwing off of the old and the welcoming of the new. Yeah. So when you ask what virtues were overthrown, it's hard to point to any set of particular virtues, but what I think was overthrown or what was challenged was what was seen to be the principles and the modes of life endorsed by another generation. And that was what that younger generation, coming of age in the late 60s, reacted against.
69 certainly sought to challenge the very idea of a common moral authority. Now, you speak in your new paper called Cracking Up, Culture and the Displacement of Virtue, of a common moral authority. What is it?
The common moral authority is one that is grounded in community norms and principles. And my concern in the paper is to address what I think is a shift from the language of virtue to the language of values. And that's a very broad and sweeping statement to make, but at heart, what it concerns is the way in which virtues represented community norms about which people could agree. They were both objective in the sense that, for example, if we talk about justice, you and I would know what we mean by justice, but they were also personal in the sense that I can take that principle of justice and evaluate my own behaviors, my own responses, my own moral framework in relation to that. So I can compare my own understanding of justice to that community norm. Values are entirely subjective. They are based on what I feel, what is of importance to me. And as we have shifted from virtues to values, so that sense of the common, the communal that binds us together in a common moral authority has, in my view, been weakened.
And if we just flip back to 69 for a moment, I mean, part of the rupture that 69 brought was the notion, because it's, and it relates very strongly to your paper, that, you know, the personal is the political too. We've started to become unable to separate the personal and the political now, isn't it? Because virtues was something, as you say, that we can hold in common. We agree on prudence, we agree on kindness, we agree on politeness, but we can disagree on politics. But you can't really do that now, can you?
It's becoming harder, I think, because of the way in which people on the left, progressives, and people on the right, whether they are classical liberals or conservatives, have increasingly become entrenched in their own positions. And even the language that they use is no longer used in common. And this has been brought out by scholars such as Jonathan Haidt, who has shown how liberals, in his American sense of the word, meaning people on the left, progressives, will use certain kinds of language that is quite different to the way language is used by people on the right. As that division has widened, as that has opened, I think it's become harder for people to talk about things in common. Mm.
Who decides now on what are the virtues?
I think that's a really important question. And because of the fact that virtues are grounded in the common, we've looked back to historical and philosophical tradition for the virtues. So, for example, the classical virtues identified by Aristotle, which were wisdom and justice, temperance and courage, have been supplemented by well-known theological virtues. You mentioned prudence, but magnanimity, munificence, faith, hope and charity. In fact, it becomes difficult to segregate them completely because they begin to fuse as the Christian era emerged. The short answer to your question is that they're determined by looking to the tradition. And when you seek to overthrow the tradition, the notion of virtue and the authority of virtue dissolves.
Yeah, well, one thing that your paper points out is that we've really challenged the notion of restraint and self-restraint, because that was a very valuable part of the culture. We knew when to stop. Just tell us about this growth in personal expression. Will you reference it in the paper, because you use this phrase, the therapeutic individual? I'm fascinated. Tell us about the growth, the evolution of the therapeutic individual.
Well, this is a notion that derived from the work principally of sociologist Philip Reif, who identified the ways in which feelings were becoming paramount. What was important was the way in which an individual related to their own circumstances and how they felt about those circumstances and their own meaning and their own sense of status. When Reif used the phrase, the therapeutic individual, he was identifying this search that became increasingly common, and we see it in full flow today, where people search for authenticity, which is often personally determined, and a search for validity and valuation. So the therapeutic self is one who is endlessly reflecting on itself without regard to broader community norms, standards, and principles.
Reif also talks about the problems that come with limitless choice. What are those problems?
Reif used this terrific phrase, which I rather like, the abyss of possibility. And he argued that, in fact, there need to be moral constraints around behaviour, because if we are not constrained by commonly agreed communal and social norms, anything becomes possible. And without the restraints that he believed were formed through the process of education, which began in the family, and then through the institutions of education, school and university, we get a sense of what it is that we can do and what it is that we can't do, things that are permissible and things that are taboo. Once those bonds, once those boundaries weaken and dissolve, we can envisage that we can do anything we want. And so, as Reif would put it, we stand on the precipice of the abyss of possibility.
Well, great to talk to you. Peter Curti, he's a senior fellow at the Centre for Independent Studies. He's also an adjunct associate law professor at Notre Dame University, and his new paper is called Cracking Up Culture and the Displacement of Virtue. Peter, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks so much, Andrew.